One of the most disturbing elements of the Prohibition War is how it's made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows the futility of Prohibition and reaches out to educate the community and current law enforcement. Today, the Russ Belville Show visits with another speaker from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition with one clear message. Cops say legalize drugs.
Welcome back, everybody. 33 after the hour. Today in our Cops Say Legalized Drugs segment, we go to Ohio, where we're joined by retired senior patrol officer Tim Johnson out there in Hilliard. And Tim, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, Russ. How are you doing tonight?
Fantastic. Thanks for joining us here. And I was told you're a retired senior patrol officer. Tell us about your background. When did you start and for how long were you on the force?
After completing college in the early 80s, I actually got into law enforcement in the early 90s, and I retired approximately 2 years ago in 2014. My background involves patrol functions, undercover narcotics, task force units from local to federal, community relations, field training officer, a variety of specialties I was involved in.
So you were involved in law enforcement from, you know, before medical marijuana took off in California to after legalization happened in Colorado then?
That's true.
Okay. So in your time working as a patrol officer and especially in the undercover narcotics business, do you have any estimate on how many times or how many busts you made of cannabis growers, sellers, consumers?
Well, I can say I made too many from that perspective. To reflect real quick on one of my first arrests was of a 19-year-old boy smoking a joint in a pavilion in a park one day. The outcome of that was under the decrim laws in Ohio that we presumed that existed, the individual, just for mere possession of a joint, ended up with a criminal charge in the court case. As a result of that, he lost his college tuition. He lost his driving privileges for a period of time. He also lost the part-time job he had. And that kind of led him. I kept track of the individual, and that's when I realized that the war on drugs, that we were approaching it in the wrong aspects.
So this, and a lot of people who are listening, they may not know, but Ohio has the greatest decrim amount in the country at 100 grams of possession. So how did that end up becoming a criminal charge?
Once it gets into the court, it's really up to the judge. The statutes are set as guidelines for the courts, for the judge, for them to decide what the punishment and the penalties are going to be. As a result, in this particular case, it's the mere possession charge. He ended up with a misdemeanor criminal charge rather than just the assumed that a minimal fine amount and no criminal record and then move on down the street. Unfortunately, that didn't happen for him.
Yeah. How long ago was this case? Do you remember?
I'm going to say probably in 1999.
Wow. So what's it like then when you're working as a cop from 1999 on and continuing to make these busts of cannabis consumers and growers and sellers? But like, I know part of it must be, hey, I'm a cop. I don't write the laws. I got to obey, you know, I got to enforce the laws as they're written. But does it like inside just start to eat at you and start to make you feel any sort of guilt or regret?
It definitely does, Russ. And a lot of times it is the officer's discretion out there, but discretion goes out the door when a fellow officer arrives for a backup,
right?
Or you have a supervisor on the scene with you, or you're working search warrants of that nature. That discretion kind of goes out the door as a, you know, from a professional standard at that point, what has to be done is the letter of the law rather than the spirit of the law.
Yeah. So if you're in a situation where you're, approaching the 19-year-old kid by yourself and he's got a joint, you might just take it from him, put it out and send him on his way. But when your partner's there or the supervisor's there, you got to, you know, follow the letter of the law, right?
That's true. Yeah, you're forced under administrative pressures to make decisions that may not be the best of your morals and values, but rather those that are set by society.
And of course, I talk to cops every other week here, ex-cops and prosecutors here on this show. And, one of the jokes that we have is that, you never got sent out to any brawl or domestic disturbance and found nothing but joints and bongs laying around. It was usually alcohol. Does that knowledge percolate up to the upper ranks? And if so, do they just ignore it because they know there's so much money involved in keeping marijuana criminal?
I believe you're right on the mark there. That definitely goes uphill. The further you climb the ladder in the law enforcement career field, the more adamant you are about following the letter of the law so that you can maintain that position. And it definitely, there is a lot of money involved in it. There are drug seizure funds that every department has. A lot of departments, especially smaller ones, rely on those drug seizure funds for equipment for the department, uniforms, continued education, and so forth. And there is, cannabis does provide quite a bit of a good flow of funds there for departments.
So in moving forward, Ohio right now has just passed a medical marijuana law. And there was a lot of input from law enforcement about that, trying to make it as restrictive as possible. But do you think that medical law might be, changing some of law enforcement's attitudes in Ohio or not?
I can tell you for a fact that it's changing. What it's doing is, I call it the one percenter bill myself, because of the lack of actual number of patients it's going to help. Mm-hmm. The problem with, or what's going to happen is, not only do we still have the criminal statutes for possession or cultivation or distribution of a controlled Schedule I substance, now we'll have an additional set of criminal statutes for a medicinal cannabis. And a lot of people don't, I guess they don't believe or understand that aspect of it. That's how I look at what's being developed. And of course, I did speak with several senators, several representatives, and brought that to their attention. However, the bill did get passed, and it is what it is. And they're in the process now of promulgating those new statutes that will come into use or into play in the future.
As I looked at that medical bill in Ohio, and it finally passed with the ability of patients to get whole plant, that is cannabis buds, from a dispensary. They can't grow their own, but they can get it from a dispensary, but they can't be smoked. And that sounded to me like a law enforcement addition there, so that they could still bust people with a burnt joint or a marijuana pipe. Do you think that's what went down?
Yeah, law enforcement played a very large part. There were a few that did come in and testify at several of the different steps of the hearings along the way. That was their concerns. Well, I think one of their biggest concerns, and one of the chief deputies actually said it, that if they're not allowed to smoke it anymore, then how can we smell it? Well, you can smell it even if it's not burnt. There's burnt cannabis and there's, fresh cannabis.
Yeah.
The point with Ohio's law, what they actually call it is plant material. So it hasn't really, there's a great cloud there, whether or not it's actually at a dispensary, whether or not you're going to be able to get the actual bud, and if so that happens, you will have to vaporize that.
Yeah, and I suppose when people get their bud at home, they'll make sure to not smoke it with the same degree of diligence that they obey the "for tobacco use only" sign in the head shop. I think people are probably going to smoke at home still.
I'll give my personal perception on it. The bill has a point. There are a lot of children and a lot of adults that do need the medicine. It's just the way that the bill is written. It's really enhanced the black market, in my opinion, because it's so restrictive. It's biased and prejudiced towards the type of ailments that people will have. And then again, the majority of people that are on those types of medications for those ailments are on Medicare, Medicaid, some form of insurance. Well, the dispensaries don't cover that. Mm. So you have to pay cash out of pocket. And I see very, high costs from other states, from hundreds to thousands of dollars a month for the treatments for their medicinal cannabis. And I just can't see myself being a patient or a qualifying patient under the House Bill 523, I myself, I don't believe I'll be able to afford those prices.
Hmm. And so this is something you're looking at as a medical treatment for yourself?
Yes, I am. That's a definite consideration. And we still are striving to, once the bill's actually in effect, to start making amendments to it as soon as we can to bring in some, some real life realization to what the reality of that bill is.
Okay. Now, most famously, last year, Ohio had the chance to legalize marijuana, but it was a very flawed initiative that kind of set up an oligopoly of the original investors. It was soundly rejected by Ohio voters. But do you think they rejected it for the business aspect? Do you think that possibly they could be ready in Ohio to vote for legalization as soon as 2020?
I believe they'll be voting next year for it.
Oh, really?
There are movements out there now, and there are bills that are not bills, but amendments that have been approved by the Attorney General's office. There are organizations that are actively collecting signatures at this time for next year. And there's still an organization that has a chance to get it on this year if they continue with it. We don't know at this point what they're going to do, but we'll wait and see what's going to happen.
All right. And you think the people could pass it?
I believe the people will, because the House bill, I believe, lifted a lot of the social stigma that is placed upon cannabis as the reefer madness attitude and perception of it. So I believe that can happen, and I do see it happening. I believe that last year, the monopolistic thing, I really don't believe that played a part in it. I believe it was pro-cannabis against pro-cannabis that defeated that bill. And I think this year here, there's a stronger chance for Ohio to come back. If not this November of 17, I could see them coming back with something on the ballot.
Oh, I'm really looking forward to that. We'd like to get Ohio in the legal category. We've been speaking with Tim Johnson, a retired senior patrol officer from the state of Ohio. He's a speaker with Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. The group is called LEAP, and you can find them at leap.cc. They got speakers all around the country that'll show up to your Lions Club, your Rotary Club. I don't know. You do high school assemblies, college gigs too?
Yes, we do. From schools clear up through the corporate ladder, we're available for all civic associations, community organizations, business organizations, all levels of school. We're well rehearsed in those.
All right. Well, Tim, thank you so much for all the work you did as a police officer, except the part about busting cannabis consumers. But at least you're making amends for that by being with LEAP, and we appreciate that a lot.
Certainly trying to do it.
All right. Good luck to you, and good luck to the state of Ohio.
Thanks, Russ, again. Please reach us at LEAP, copsaylegalizeddrugs.com.
That's right. copsaylegalizeddrugs.com. Check it out. One of my favorite groups out there. One of the most important groups out there fighting for our freedom. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we'll have time for the Radical Rant. We're taking a look at a paper from the Brookings Institute on the reframing of the marijuana debate. Important information you need to know to win the water cooler wars when we return.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.